So, this morning we're going to be continuing our series on the parables. Now, regardless of where you are in life this morning, I have no idea. Oh, by the way, excuse my throat. I was at the Queen Elizabeth Stadium yesterday cheering on Mo Farah, and he really wouldn't have won without me shouting as loud as I did. So I do apologize for the state of my voice this morning. I got thoroughly carried away. Now, it doesn't matter who we are, where we've come from. I don't know whether you are curious about Christ or committed to Christ. I don't know whether you call yourself a Christian or whether you're just exploring things this morning. But it strikes me that there are some fundamental questions that you and I all share together. The big questions about life. You know, what is my purpose? You know, some of you guys in from shift this morning, why are you on the planet? Why are you here? Your parents might say that to you sometimes. But why are you here? And what are you here to do? What is your purpose in life? And how are you going to accomplish that purpose? And then there are really big questions. There are big questions about, okay, well, that starts me thinking about God. Because if there is a God, that kind of changes everything. It strikes me as mind-bafflingly mind-blowing that people can say, yeah, I don't know if there's a God or not, as if that's all right. If there is or isn't a God, that changes everything. Agnosticism is a helpful place to travel through. It's not a good place to live. It's a bit like, you know, little chefs. They're all right for a meal on a journey, but they are part of a journey and you do not want to get stuck there. It's barking mad to think, oh, I don't know if there's a God, that's fine. You're going to be wrong. There either is or there isn't. And you're going to go through your whole life thinking, oh, I don't know. It's a big question. Yes. That seems fairly fundamental because that changes everything. And if there is a God, how on earth do we get to please him? And how on earth do we get to meet him? You know, we have these Buddhist temples and the Hindu shrines and we have these Muslim mosques and we have these kind of, you know, well, summer solstice at Stonehenge and all these different things where people try and meet. If there is a God, how do you meet him? Well, all of these questions about our life's purpose, about God, about what we're here for and how we find our purpose and how we know this God and meet this God, all of those questions that we find answers to this morning in a surprisingly simple and surprisingly brief parable. Let's I'm looking at Richard and I've got the clicker. Ta-da. Oh, let's try that again. No, the clicker's not working. That's why I was looking at Richard. Okay, so here's the parable. Why do you call me Lord, Lord, and do not do what I say? As for everyone who comes to me and hears my words and puts them into practice, I'll show you what they're like. They're like a man building a house who dug down deep and laid the foundation on a rock. And when a flood came, the torrent struck that house but could not shake it because it was well built. But the one who hears my words and does not put them into practice is like a man who built a house on the ground without a foundation. The moment the torrent struck that house, it collapsed and its destruction was complete. I took my wife on a date this week. Ever the romantic. We went to Mr. Toy's Noodle Bar down in town, got ourselves a box of noodles, and we went and sat on a bench on Goring Gap. We know how to celebrate. I just can't help being romantic. And as we sat there enjoying the lovely sunny evening, and I was enjoying how much it had cost, there was suddenly this kind of boom. Boom. I was thinking, what the heck is that? And I looked at Karis and she said, it wasn't me. And I said, it certainly wasn't me. Boom. It was just, you felt it as much as you could hear it. And I was thinking, where is that coming from? We'll come back to that a bit later. Now, three things to notice about this parable. Number one, those of you who went to Sunday school will remember, the wise man built his house upon. That's very sad. Stop there. You will notice that this parable has absolutely nothing to do with that song. There is not a wise or foolish man anywhere present in this parable. That's Matthew's version of the story. Notice number one. This is a parable about foundations. It is not a parable about builders. Number two. Notice where this comes. It's Luke chapter 6. That means that it has come at the end of a long passage of teaching called the Sermon on the Plain. And Jesus, it's an extended period of Jesus riveting a crowd with his brilliant insights. And at the end of it, he tells this parable. Because he really doesn't just want them to listen. He wants it to make a difference to the way they live. So notice where it comes. And the third thing is, just notice what's happening in your head as soon as you start thinking about the word builder. Because we have, you know, hard hats, scaffolding, lots of health and safety signs all over the place. They're, you know, that's the way we think about builders. In those days, they weren't professional builders. They were building their own house. It was a dangerous occupation. It changed everything. So when they built, they had to build in the summer season because they couldn't build in the winter because of the rain. So when people were building their own houses, like a big DIY project, they built in the summer because of the rains in the winter. The only trouble with that is, as it says in the book of Leviticus, the ground of Israel in the summer is like bronze. So in other words, they haven't got any tractors, they haven't got any diggers, they've just got pickaxes, and they've got to get through bake hard soil. And they really do have to get through it because the only safe way to build in Israel was to get down to the rock. Now, if you're building up high, the rock is only 2 or 3 inches under the ground. If you're down in the valley, you're going to have to dig 10 feet through ground like bronze. So it was immensely tempting to skimp on the foundations if you were building in the valley. And this is an issue even now in Israel. So in 1991, there was a 23 flat apartment block, part of which collapsed. And it looks like just an earthquake had hit it. But when they actually did the research, a sewer had burst up the road. The water from the sewer had come down and hit half of the apartment block. Because it wasn't built on a foundation of rock, but on the ground, that had gradually eroded away. And they first knew where there was trouble when a bath from the fourth floor ended up on the first floor, which could have been quite serious. And they had to evacuate the whole building. It is still an issue today in Israel. There is not a set foundation depth to which you need to build. You just need to get down to the rock. Everybody with me so far? Okay. So the whole idea of Jesus talking about this parable at the end of the Sermon on the Plain is to say, look, it's no good me just teaching. You have to put it into practice. But actually, he's saying something much, much more profound, controversial, and significant. And because we're Westerners, we miss it completely. And I want to tell you about it now. And it's all got to do with a thing called the Shittiah, I don't know how to pronounce it in Hebrew, but the Shittiah stone. Let me explain what the Shittiah stone is. So, if you're a Jew, you believe that God has given you the promised land, the nation of Israel. The land is really significant. And at the center of that promised land is Jerusalem, the holy city, called Zion in the Old Testament. Rich with expectation of this is the center of where God blesses his people. So you've got a promised land, and at the center you've got Jerusalem, the holy city. At the center of the holy city, you've got a temple. And then where people go to worship God and to meet with God, a holy place. And then at the center of the temple, you've got a room called the Holy of Holies. And once a year, the high priest on the Day of Atonement was allowed to go in there with a rope tied around him just in case he pegged out while he was in there, because nobody else was allowed to go in there and they didn't want a decomposing body, so they would pull him out. So he's tied in with rope, and in the Holy of Holies he would go in carrying this big pan, and this pan would be full of burning charcoal with lots of incense on top. It's a very theatrical, very dramatic demonstration of the presence of God. And on the Day of Atonement, with a rope round his waist, he will walk in carrying this this pan, and in the Holy of Holies, so you've got the Promised Land. At the heart of the Promised Land is Jerusalem, Zion. At the heart of Jerusalem is the temple. At the heart of the temple is the Holy of Holies. And in the heart of the Holy of Holies is this Shittiah stone, which is three fingers' breadth higher than any other stone on the floor of the Holy of Holies. And there the high priest would put this burning pan. And in Jewish thought, this Shittiah stone was the foundation, not just for the temple, but for the city. Not just for the city, for the entire land. And not just for the entire land. Jews believed and went on to believe that this Shittiah stone was the place from which God created the universe. It is at the center of the center of the center of the center. It is the very foundation stone on which Jewish faith was built. And if we go to the next slide, we can see that Isaiah 28, hundreds of years before, the prophet Isaiah had prophesied this. So this is what the sovereign Lord says. See, I lay a stone in Zion, a tested stone, a precious cornerstone for a sure foundation. The one who relies on it will never be stricken with panic. And so Jewish thought was that stone is the Shittiah stone, right at the heart of the Holy of Holies, right at the heart of the temple, right at the heart of Zion, right at the heart of the Promised Land. Everybody with me so far? And Jesus says, nope, I'm the foundation. You put my words into practice and you build your life on the rock, and that's me. And everybody listening to this story is thinking, oh man, this teacher from Nazareth, he's claiming to be God. He's claiming to be the temple. He's claiming to be the foundation of it all. That's exactly what Jesus was doing. He saw himself as the fulfillment of Isaiah 28. Jesus is suggesting that that promise that that prophet made is fulfilled in him. He's saying, if you come to me and hear my words and put them into practice, you will build your life on a rock foundation and make those lives stormproof. You put my teaching into practice in your lives and you'll have a solid platform and a sure base for the future of your life. You can depend not on the Holy of Holies and the function of the temple. You can depend on me. Eugene Peterson's paraphrase of the teaching of this parable is brilliant. These words I speak to you are not incidental additions to your life, homeowner improvements to your standard of living. They are foundational words, words to build a life upon. So the big question we need to get our heads around, if we're going to answer all those fundamental questions we started this sermon with, the question is, so where is the temple now? A temple is a holy place where God is worshipped and where people meet with God. So the first Jewish temple was built by Solomon and destroyed by Nebuchadnezzar. It was tried to be rebuilt by Zerubbabel in the time of Ezra and was later looted. In 20 BC, Herod started to build the temple and it took 46 years. And then it was destroyed by the Romans in AD 70. And in the 4th century, Emperor Julian tried to rebuild the temple, but that was thwarted by earthquakes. Then in the 7th century, the Muslim conquests happened, and they built the Muslim shrine, the Dome of the Rock, over the current temple site, which has been there since 961. And then in 1967, in the Six-Day War, the Jews won back Jerusalem. They captured it back from the Muslims. But that dome is still administrated by Muslim clerks to this day. And there is a great deal of argument about where exactly the old temple was in one of four different places. We will not get into that. But this is the answer to the question. In Jesus Christ, a temple ceased to be a building and became a person. In Jesus, the temple ceased to be a building and became a person. The holy place where God is worshipped and people came to meet God was no longer in bricks and mortar. Jesus was saying, it happens when you meet me. I'm the pathway to God. I'm the doorway to God. I'm the foundation for knowing God. That's what he was saying in this parable. That's why he got in trouble with the Jewish leaders. And you read about this in John chapter 2 when he said, destroy this temple and I'll rebuild it in 3 days. And they're saying, what? It took us 46 years to build. What are you talking about? Well, he's talking about his life being destroyed and 3 days later being raised from the dead. He's the new temple. That's why when he was crucified, what happened in the Holy of Holies, the curtain of the temple was torn from top to bottom. It was a dramatic sign by God to authenticate the fact that in Jesus, the temple shifted from being a building to being a person. And that's why Peter says in 1 Peter 2, as you come to him, the living stone, rejected by humans, but chosen by God and precious to him, you also, like living stones, are being built into a spiritual house to be a holy priesthood, offering spiritual sacrifices acceptable to God through Jesus Christ. So Peter is recognizing actually the living stone, the Shetar stone, the heart of the Holy of Holies, the heart of the temple, the heart of all the promises God is not a building, he's Jesus. Everybody with me? But then here's the really exciting bit. Because Peter starts to say, so hold on. Where's this temple now? Well, the temple's Jesus. And he's at the right hand of the throne of the Father in heaven, interceding on our behalf. Fantastic. But that's not the only place Jesus is it? Where's this temple? In you and me. That's exactly what Paul says in 1 Corinthians 3:16. Don't you know that you yourselves are God's temple and that God's Spirit lives among you? Isn't that beautiful? We are the temple. Back to Goring Gap, my expensive date. Boom! I mean, what the heck is this? And it seemed to be coming from out at sea. And so I stood up and went to the beach. Some of you have seen it already, haven't you? You know what I'm going to say. Right on the horizon, they're building a wind farm. Now, those wind farms, they're going to produce electricity from the wind. And so they're going to have to stand not only the battering of the sea, but the battering of the wind. So they need really, really deep foundations. And the only thing I could make out that it could possibly be was right out at sea, and I have no idea how many miles. You can just make it out with the naked eye. They are going boom, 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 driving in foundations that will hold those wind turbines secure in the storms that are coming their way. Foundations. And when Jesus was on a cross, and nails were being smashed through the metatarsals in his feet and dislocating his hands. And when his body was hung up with jarring agony on that cross, he drove in the foundations for you and I to be founded on him. Utterly loved. Utterly secure. Did anybody see James's email this week? That beautiful email he wrote to the church this week, quoting some bloke's name I could never pronounce, saying, the operative power that makes you a Christian today is the same power, the operative power that makes you a Christian is the same power that keeps you a Christian. The unconditional, unqualified, undeserved, unrestrained grace of God in the completed work of Christ. The banner under which the Christian lives reads, "It is finished." So relax and rejoice. Jesus plus nothing equals everything, and everything minus Jesus equals nothing. You are free. The foundation stones have been put in place. Jesus is the new temple. He is the Holy of Holies. It's this beautiful, beautiful picture. Anybody ever been rock climbing? This is me. I have been rock climbing. I found it very difficult because I was shaking so much I couldn't get my hands to doing it. Rock climbing is hard work and it is terrifying. I tell you what's a lot easier, rock standing. I can do that. You just do that. As a Christian, we are not rock climbers, we are rock standers. It's done. When he said it's finished, he really meant it. His banner over you and me is love. We are accepted. We are forgiven. We're children of grace. When Satan reminds you of your past, you remind him of his future. We are solid. We are secure because our foundation is in what Christ has accomplished on the cross, the completed and whole work that Jesus has made done. And all we have to do is stand on those promises. Stand on that foundation. Take hold of that which he has made us already. Take hold of our inheritance with both hands. It's not about earning like every other temple in every other religion trying to make our way to God. It's simply accepting what Christ has done and standing on the foundation that that is at the heart of our lives. Isn't that beautiful? And that's what Jesus was talking about in this parable. And here's the thing. When we make Jesus our foundation, we become a temple for everybody else. When we make Jesus our foundation, we become a holy place where God is worshipped and where other people can meet God. We become a temple for everybody else. Jesus became the foundation of the temple for us so that we could become a temple for others as he became the foundation in our lives. What is our purpose in living? Our purpose is to be a place which worships God, a person who worships God, and where other people can meet God. That's what the Christian answer is to what is our purpose in life. How does that come about? Well, it's very simple. It's there in verse 46 of this passage. I'm just going back to that briefly. Oh, 47. How do we make Jesus foundational in our lives? As for everyone who comes to me, hears my words, and puts them into practice. Comes to me, hears my words, and puts them into practice. Come to Jesus, listen to Jesus, and put what Jesus says into practice. That is how he becomes the foundation of our lives, and that is how we become a temple for others. And here lies the function of church. This building isn't a temple, just in case you were unsure. 77 The Strand or any other church isn't a temple. Churches, not the buildings, but the communities of people, equip each other to be the temples that the world needs. That's the function of church. You can't do this stuff on your own. We need to arrange our lives with habits and rhythms so that we find out how do we meet with God? How do we come to Jesus, rather? How do we listen to him? The habits and rhythms of reading the Bible and those kind of things. How do we cultivate those habits? How do we put what Jesus says into practice? I don't know about you, but I desperately need other people's help. That is why we do church. That is what Maybridge is all about. So let's rehearse. What's the purpose of life? Jesus said it's to be a holy place where God is worshipped and where other people can meet God. That's our purpose. How does it happen? It happens as we find ways together of meeting with Jesus, listening to Jesus, and putting what Jesus says into practice. That's our purpose, and that's how we do it. Is there a God? This parable says, yes, there certainly is, and his name is Jesus. And if our lives are not founded in him, they will not survive the storms of life. And if our lives are founded on him, then they will. The big fundamental questions of human existence answered in just a few words from a parable. So, the all-important question that we'll pick up in the takeaways this week, because we want Sundays to equip us to live this life in Jesus, is how do we meet Jesus? How do we listen to Jesus? And how do we help each other put his words into practice? Jesus didn't want us just to be hearers of the word. He wanted us to do what it says. Let's help one another to make Jesus the foundation of our lives so that we become a temple for everybody around us. For the sake of the world, Lord, do this in us. God bless you.